This Mishnah is really a continuation of the previous Mishnah, which talked about when a non-Jew is left alone with a Jew's wine for a relatively short amount of time, or perhaps a longer amount of time, when exactly we need to be concerned that during that amount of time, the non-Jew touched the wine and turned it into Yain Nesech. And the Mishnah begins, Maniach Yenoi Bakoroin, one who leaves his wine in a wagon, a basfina, or on a boat, a ship. And there was a non-Jew who was left there on the ship or in the wagon, and the Jew left on a shortcut, meaning he showed them that he was going to be a very short amount of time, that he was going the shortest route, but in reality, once they couldn't see him anymore, Nichnas LaMedina, he entered into the town there, Verochatz, and he washed himself in a bathhouse, and it was a much longer time. Mutter, the wine, when he comes back, is permitted for him to benefit from, and he does not need to be concerned that they turned it into Yei Nesech by touching it and opening it up and opening the seal, because they thought he would be a much shorter time. They were always afraid that he's about to come back in a second, so they would not have opened up the wine and turned it into Yei Nesech. But what happens if Im Haydiyoy Shul Maflig, he told the non-Jew that he's going to be a longer time, so what does that amount of time need to be? If the amount of time that he told them he would be, again, if it's just the amount of time that he will be, that's irrelevant because they'll be too afraid. They'll think he's going to be a shorter time. But if the amount that he told them he would be is enough time, k'deisha yishtoim, that they'll be able to make a hole in the seal, the yishtoim, and after turning it into Yei Nesech, they'll be able to fill up that hole, the yigov, and that new part of the seal will dry up so that it won't be so noticeable what he has done. So then the non-Jew will not be afraid. He'll know that he'll have enough time to do that. And so we need to be concerned that indeed he did that. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, we don't need to be concerned that he'll do it like that, because the non-Jew will always still be afraid that even once the seal has dried, that part of the seal which he filled up will be a bit different to the rest of the seal, and that the Jew will tell, he'll recognize what he did. So we're only concerned with the possibility, k'deish yiftach, enough time that he'll open up the entire seal, the yigov, and reseal it with an entirely new seal, the sigov, and there'll be enough time for the seal to dry. That's a slightly longer time according to Rav Shimon Gamliel. Now even though the previous mission already told us what this amount of time is, I might have thought that in this case it's different, because the non-Jew is able to make the ship or the wagon drive off for a bit and then come back, but as long as they were driven off away from the shore or away from where they had left the wagon, even if the Jew would come back, he wouldn't be able to see what they're doing. So I might have thought that we should be more concerned in this case, and so the Mishnah says that no, we don't need to be concerned for that possibility. Now the Mishnah gives another example. If somebody leaves a non-Jew behind in his shop, and in the shop is barrels of wine, which are sealed up, even though the Jew is going out and coming in, he's not always there in the shop. Nevertheless, mutar, the wine remains permitted because the non-Jew is too afraid to start opening up the wine in case he'll be caught by the Jew. He thinks that the Jew might come back in any second. However, if the Jew told him he's going to be a longer time, then it will be forbidden if the amount of time that he told him he would be is enough time for him to make a hole in the seal, stop up the hole, and for that part of it to dry. Rav Shimon Gamliel says it has to be enough time, enough time that he can open up the entire seal and put on an entirely new seal, and for that to dry. And the reason why the Mishnah has to bring this example again is because I might have thought I should be more concerned over here, since the non-Jew is able to lock the store, such that even if the Jew will come back, he won't be able to see what exactly the non-Jew is doing, and so the non-Jew will be less afraid of doing it, because he knows that even if the Jew does come back, he won't really be able to see what I'm doing. The Mishnah says we're not concerned for that possibility, and therefore, only if the Jew told him it would be this long, would the wine be forbidden. Mishnah, if a Jew was eating together with a non-Jew on the table, they were in the Jew's house, and he was eating together with a non-Jew, and the Jew placed a bottle of wine on the table which they were eating from, and also placed a bottle, or more than one bottle, of wine on the dulbaki, which is some sort of smaller table or stool, where they would place some drinks, some food, on the side of the table, and usually somebody else would serve them from that table. But it wasn't really an accepted thing for a guest to go straight to the dulbaki and take something from there. That was considered very rude, and the wine and the food which was there was waiting for it to be served at the table. Be as it may, the Jew left the non-Jew there by himself, and he left He left for a very short amount of time, and then he came back. The question is, has the wine which has been left with the non-Jew by himself become prohibited? Mash'al ha-shulchan, the wine which was left on the table, says the Mishnah, osur, that is definitely prohibited, because we certainly need to be concerned that the non-Jew touched that wine. It was right in front of him, there's nothing stopping him touching that wine, and therefore that wine would become yein nesech. However, mash'al ha-dulbuki, the wine which is on the dulbuki on the side, mutter is permitted still, even if it's not sealed, because the non-Jew is very unlikely to go straight to that table because it's considered very rude. And just because of that, he's afraid that the Jew will find him taking wine from the dulbuki. That in itself is a deterrent, and we do not need to be concerned that he went to the dulbuki to take the wine and to touch the wine. Vim Omar Loi, however, if when the Jew left him, he said to him, "Hevi meizig v'shoiseh, you can pour and drink." He's inviting him to pour more wine for himself and to drink it. In that case, afshal adulbuki, also even the wine which is on the dulbuki on the side is forbidden, because the implication is that the Jew is permitting him to even take wine from there. Or at least the non-Jew might understand him like that. Or he can excuse himself if he does go and take wine from there. He's definitely no longer afraid that it's rude for him to go up to the dulbuki and take wine from there. Now, apart from this, all of the wine, all of the barrels which is in this Jew's house is now under threat, because he's left his house alone with this non-Jew. So all of the other barrels in the house, chovyes pesuchos asuros, the barrels which are open and I've not got a seal or a lid on, asuros, are forbidden. Whereas stumos, the ones which have a seal on them, the regular law would apply, like we saw in a few Mishnahs early on in this perek, Kadesha Yiftach v'yigayv v'sigayv, if the Jew left for enough time that the non-Jew is able to open up the entire seal and to put on a new seal, and for the seal to dry so that the Jew won't realize what he did, then it would be forbidden. This represents the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. According to the Tanna Kamma of the previous Mishnahs, we learned that it's an even shorter amount of time for him to just make a hole in the seal and to replace that hole and for it to dry. Mishnah Vov, Baleshes Goyim. If there is a troop of soldiers who are plundering through people's houses, Shenichnasal Lo'ir B'Shas Shalom, and they entered into the city at a time of peace, there wasn't a war going on, so it's not as if they were in a big rush, perhaps searching for something, or going through every single one of the houses, they're in a big rush. No. They had time, and they were in a particular house, and the Jew didn't manage to see everything that this group of soldiers was doing. Once they have left, what is the status of his wine? The answer is, says the Mishnah, Chovyos Pesuchos, open barrels asuros, are forbidden because there is certainly a concern that the non-Jews touched that wine. But stumos, the barrels of wine which are closed, mutaris, are permitted. Reason being that it's quite clear that this group of soldiers are not really afraid of the owner of this house. So it's not as if they were to open up the barrel and turn it into Yenesech, they're not going to now replace the seal on the barrel or close it up again in order to try and pretend that they hadn't turned it into Yenesech. These people aren't afraid of anybody. So if it's still closed, that means that they didn't do anything with it. Because if they had opened it up, they would not have replaced the seal. And therefore, Motorius, they would be permitted to benefit from the wine of the barrels which are still closed. On the other hand, B'shas Melchoma, if this group of soldiers entered the house at a time of war, so then they're in a big rush, for whatever reason they entered the house, that's what they're focused on. They haven't got time or really motivation at that point to start opening up the barrels and touching the wine and turning it into Yenesech. And so, Eilu Motorois, both the closed and the open barrels, even the open ones would be permitted, because there's no time for them to turn it into Yenesech, and they're not concentrated on that, rather they have other things to deal with. Mishnah Zayin, Umin Shel Yisrael, Jewish workers who worked for a non-Jew, nothing to do with Yain Nesech, they did a regular job for him, and he now owes them payment. And of course the regular payment is money. So there is a monetary claim, a monetary right, which the Jews have on the non-Jew, that the non-Jew owes them money. Now instead of giving them wages of money, Sheshonach Lehem Nochri Chavos Shel Yain Nesech B'scharan, the non-Jewish employer sent them a barrel of Yain Nesech as their wages. Maybe he didn't realize that it's forbidden for them to benefit from the Yenesech, but he sent that to them as their wages. As long as they haven't taken acquisition of that wine and made it theirs, halachically speaking, mutorim loy maloy, they are permitted to tell the non-Jew, tenon enonves domeho, give us the value of this Yenesech. We want money and we don't want wine. This is not considered to be like they're benefiting from the Yenesech, because they already owed money by the non-Jew. That is their claim, and they're just refusing to accept the Yenesech instead of the money. However, once the barrel of wine has entered into their domain, and they accepted this as their wages, and they did an acquisition on it, then also it would be forbidden to now send that back to the non-Jew and ask him for money instead. Because there it's looked at as if they are selling him back the Yei Nesech and receiving money in return. And that would be benefiting from the Yei Nesech, which of course is forbidden. The Mishnah continues now with a new law, HaMoicher Yeinu LaNochri, one who sells his wine to a non-Jew. So he is a Jew, his wine is not yet Yei Nesech, and he is selling his wine to the non-Jew. Posak Achelei Modad, if he set the price of the wine before he started measuring the wine into the container. So the non-Jew knows exactly what the price is, and then the non-Jew pours the wine into the container. As soon as the non-Jew picks up that container, even before he has paid for it, he acquires the wine. He knows exactly what the price is, he agreed on it, and he's now picking up the wine, so he has full intention to acquire that wine and to make it his. Now, even if he touches it a second later, and he turns it into Yei Nesech, he's now turning his own wine into Yei Nesech. But he already owes money to the Jew from the time that he acquired the wine. And at that time, it wasn't yet Yei Nesech. So the money which he owes the Jew for that wine is for money, is money for wine, which is permitted wine. Because at the time of the acquisition, it was permitted. So Domo Motorian, it is permitted for the Jew to benefit from that money. However, Modad Adjeloi Pasak, if the Jew first measured the wine into the container before setting the exact price, and the non-Jew picked up that wine, and the understanding between them was that he was going to buy it. But the non-Jew doesn't have absolutely full intention to buy the wine until he knows what the price is. And in this case, he took the wine, but this wasn't good enough to make it his. And meanwhile, he's holding it, and the non-Jew in this case touched the wine, because the price hadn't yet been set, it wasn't yet considered his, and therefore, he's effectively turned the Jew's wine into Yei Nesech. So even once the Jew does tell him the price, and he now has full intention to acquire it, he'll now be acquiring Yei Nesech from the Jew, and the Jew will effectively be receiving money for Yei Nesech, which will be forbidden, and therefore the Mishnah says, Domo Vasurin, the money for that wine would be forbidden for the Jew to benefit from. Continue the mission, and not unless a mashpich, if somebody took a funnel, and he measured amount of wine through this funnel into a jug or a bottle belonging to a non-Jew. So he had his own wine, and he was pouring it into the container of a non-Jew, the non-Jew's container, and that container already contained some wine, which was Yei Nesech, but he didn't pour it directly into the non-Jew's container of wine, but rather through a funnel. So there was a flow of wine going from the Jewish person's bottle of wine in down to the funnel, and then in the funnel it flowed until it reached the whole of the funnel, and then there was a flow of wine going down into the non-Jew's flask or jug. So certainly any wine which is in the funnel is going to become forbidden because of the rule of Nitzay Chibur. As we've seen, if something permitted is flowing into a prohibited liquid and there's no break in that flow, then halachically speaking, it's all viewed as connected and all of the wine in the funnel will also be forbidden as Yei Nesech. However, the wine which is in the bottle which is being poured into the funnel, even if that's part of the same flow, that will not become forbidden. Because since it's going via the funnel, even if it's still connected, this is known as nitzik bar nitzik, and it will not become forbidden. But as it may, after this Jew then used the same funnel to pour some wine into a Jew's container of wine. He went and measured wine and poured wine through the funnel into a Jew's cup of wine, jug of wine. If there is any wine remaining in the funnel due to there being some sort of border or frame where the funnel was, so it kept some of the wine there from the previous time that the Jew had used it, and he had poured wine into a non-Jew's jug, well, all of the wine in the funnel became forbidden as Yei Nesech. So now, when he's pouring the wine through that funnel, it's mixing with that wine, and also, all of this wine would become forbidden as Yayin Nesech. Alright, and the Mishnah ends off, Ma'ar Mekliel Kli, one who pours wine from one utensil to another utensil, and the one he's pouring into contains Yayin Nesech. In this case, however, we're talking about where there is not an interrupted flow of wine. Rather, it's dropping. So there's no rule of Nitzik Chibur, and therefore, She'er Menu Mutar, the wine which is in the container, which is being poured out, is permitted. It's not considered connected and doesn't gain the status of the Ein Nesach wine. But of course, Ve'aseir Lesoichai, any drop of wine which does end up being mixed and dropping into the utensil of Ein Nesach, Osor, would be forbidden because it's being mixed, of course, with forbidden Ein Nesach wine.